Hello and welcome to Illinois Radio Reader. Today is Wednesday, May 27, 2015. This is Matthew reading from the Decatur Herald and Review. Police air details of three recent homicides. Decatur. An 18-year-old Joliet man was arrested Monday evening in connection with the shooting death earlier that day of 28-year-old Mashari Helbrook and the wounding of four other people at a near Northside club. Javon E. Barber is being held in the Macon County Jail on $1 million bond after he was arrested by Joliet police, said Deputy Decatur Police Chief Cody Moore at a news conference Tuesday morning on the three murders in Decatur in 2015. Barber, who has a prior arrest record, including weapons charges, is also a suspect in another murder case in the Joliet area, according to the request for his arrest warrant. The murder of Helbrook at Club Maxi, 1816 North Water Street, stemmed from a disagreement between him and a 25-year-old man, an associate of Barber's, over a female associated with Helbrook, said the complaint. There has also been progress in the case of the murder of 19-year-old Paige Mars, Long Creek, whose body was found April 6 near the Sangamon River just west of Lincoln Park. The police received information quickly, which led to the arrest of two suspects on another crime later that day. They are currently in custody on the non-homicide charge, Moore said. Their arrest for the murder of Paige Mars is imminent. Police recovered the firearm last week they believe to be the weapon involved in that homicide. The evidence is also being recovered and analyzed. Moore said there will be a successful resolution because of the cooperation of the public and people with knowledge of this crime. In the shooting death of Paul E. Robinson, 42, of Decatur, who died of gunshot wounds suffered about 12:30 a.m. Saturday, the police have not made any arrests. Police believe Robinson was shot on North Pine Street near West King Street. He was found on the porch of a residence on the 700 block of West King Street, having suffered multiple injuries to his torso and limbs. He was transported to a local hospital where he was pronounced dead at 1:23 a.m. Saturday. Detectives and other officers have interviewed multiple people and collected evidence in this case as well. They are seeking information from people who were in the area at the time of this crime. We feel there are people who are in the area who have information who can come forward with it to the police department, Moore said. There is no information that is irrelevant in this case. What someone believes to be insignificant can be very significant to us. Information can be given to police at 217-424-2711. That's 217-424-2711. Or to Crime Stoppers, 217-423-8477. That's 217-423-8477. Decatur Police Chief Brad Sweeney said the three homicides are not related. In the Club Maxi incident, which occurred about 12:18 a.m. Monday, there were many people in attendance for a rap concert, including some from out of town. The other four people who were shot, allegedly by Barber, did not suffer life-threatening wounds. They were struck by gunfire at least one time each, said the complaint for warrant, signed by Decatur Police Detective Joe Patton. The shooting incident stemmed from a previous conflict Helbrook had with a 25-year-old man and his associates from Joliet over a female. There was also a conflict that arose as a result of an expensive wristwatch that belonged to Helbrook. Earlier that night, Holbrook had a scuffle in the parking lot of the club, also known as Jabroni's, with a friend. During that scuffle, Holbrook's wristwatch, valued at over $2,000, had fallen off, the warrant complaint said. According to two witnesses, Javon E. Barber picked up the watch and kept it. Later, the victim asked Barber for his watch back. However, Barber refused to return it. The 25-year-old man then put his arm around the neck of Javon Barber and spoke to him, then walked away from the victim and Barber. Barber then pulled out a handgun and fired it several times into the victim at close range, striking him several times in the upper body, neck, and other locations. The court document said Barber can be seen on Facebook in a recent post by the 25-year-old man who was with him at the club. Sweeney said there are ongoing investigations in all three murder cases. There have been three very tragic incidents in the recent past that resulted in three deaths, Sweeney said. The Decatur Police Department wants to extend our deepest sympathies to the families of the deceased and to let the families know we are committed to bring those responsible for the deaths of their family members to justice. Drug test policy set at Mount Zion. Mount Zion. This fall, students wanting to participate in extracurricular activities at Mount Zion High School will have to consent to the district's recently adopted random drug testing policy. The Mount Zion School Board approved the policy May 4, applying to all students who participate in sports clubs, driving, and parking at the school. The policy also extends to school dances, banquets, the graduation ceremony, and any activity organized and sponsored by the district. High school principal Craig Garber said a large committee of school board members, administrators, teachers, parents, and students meet on an annual basis to discuss changes to the district handbook, and for the first time, a parent proposed implementing a random drug testing policy this year. Student health and well-being is our number one priority, and we want to promote good decision-making, Garber said. The idea is not to catch kids. The idea is to deter them and give them a reason to say no to those temptations. All students wishing to participate in activities that fall under the policy and their parents or legal guardians will be required to sign a consent form by September 1 or within 10 days of enrollment, whichever is later. A random selection of students would be subject to urine analysis tests that would detect prohibited substance including alcohol, marijuana, hallucinogenic drugs, barbiturates, and amphetamines. The testing would be performed at the school by clinical specialists from a district-approved laboratory. Assistant Principal Mike Mose said the cost will be between $25 and $50 per test, depending on what lab the district approves this summer. He said they do not anticipate increasing fees to fund the testing, and the total cost to the district will be known later this summer after factoring in how many of the 740 students will be randomly tested. The district will finance all initial tests, but further testing must be paid for by students and their parents or legal guardians, he said. For a student's first offense, the consequence would be ineligibility for all extracurricular activities for 3 months. After 3 months, the student's participation could be reinstated if he or she provides the school with documentation of a negative test result from a district-approved facility performed at the student's expense. The student would also have to provide proof of completing a drug and alcohol assessment and awareness program. The second offense would result in 12 months of ineligibility, and the third would ban the student from extracurricular activities for the remainder of the student's time at the school. On May 14, Garber conducted a school assembly with all high school students and those from Mount Zion Junior High School who will be incoming freshmen to discuss the policy. After hearing about the policy from her daughter, who will be a junior in the fall, Jill Phillips was disappointed that parents were not consulted prior to the decision to implement random drug tests and that they have yet to be contacted by the district. This isn't just a change in the dress code. This has a lot of implications, she said. I didn't think there was a pervasive drug problem, and parents should have been notified that there was a problem so we could have had an open discussion. She said the money the district will have to spend to finance the tests could take away from better options, such as expanding drug and alcohol awareness programming. She added that the policy would detract from the parent's responsibility to deal with a child's drug or alcohol problem. I don't think this will be a deterrent, she said. I think this will give a false sense of security for parents when we are the ones who are on the front lines of this. This is our responsibility. In March, the Decatur School District approved a random drug testing policy that applies to any non-academic extracurricular activities. The policy would apply to those in privileged, non-academic activities such as chess club, but would not affect those participating in activities such as the graduation ceremony, said Todd Kovalt, the district's chief operational officer. Garber said the Mount Zion District researched policies from several schools, including Warrensburg Latham High School, Metamora Township High School near Peoria, and Rochelle Township High School, which is about 25 miles south of Rockford. Tupper. In middle of rebuild, Illini finds new stain. Champagne. When discussing University of Illinois athletics, I frequently speak about the mission to strengthen the overall brand. Ohio State Athletics is a powerful national brand, fortified by a national championship in football and repeated men's basketball forays deep into the NCAA tournament. Michigan State has added luster to its brand under basketball coach Tom Izzo and football coach Mark D'Antonio, and Michigan is making a strong push to rev its football brand back to full power with the hiring of charismatic head coach Jim Harbaugh. Illinois, meanwhile, has watched its men's basketball brand slip steadily since its 2005 appearance in the national championship game. And in football, where the brand has never been particularly strong, it feels like every step forward is followed by a step and a half back. As a result, the overall brand is falling behind those being manufactured by its conference brothers. It's too bad because this has been a spring filled with smashing Illini success stories. Big Ten conference championships have come to baseball, men's tennis, men's track and field, and men's golf. The athletic department NCAA measured academic progress towards graduation was recently listed among the top 10 in the nation. Unfortunately, those very positive stories combined have not made as much national noise as that being created by football and women's basketball players claiming mistreatment. When the words abuse and racism are tossed around, even if unfounded, they will always become the buzzwords for an entire athletic program. On sports talk radio in Chicago these days, it's not the baseball team they're raving about. Instead, they're making fun of a school whose coaches are once again under fire. To move beyond it in football, the external investigation being conducted by Chicago law firm Franzick Radlett must be completed and Tim Beckman's program must be largely exonerated. There is reason for optimism. Despite the clamor created by former player Simon Chovanovich, Twitter outburst 2 weeks ago, only a smattering of other complaints have emerged, and they've been offset by a large contingent of current and former players who say their experiences in Beckman's program were largely positive. Even former players who may not have liked Beckman agree that he tried to create a family atmosphere that included proper care for players and their injuries. The women's basketball situation, however, is different in that 7 players, 4 of whom he recruited, have signed a document that clearly wants head coach Matt Bolin's job. Not enough, they say, that former associate coach Mike DeVilbiss is no longer with the program, they want a complete house cleaning. Athletics director Mike Thomas has asked for patience, pointing out that coaches deserve to let the fact-finding investigation run its course. That's fair. Accusations don't automatically translate into guilt. But there's one thing Bolant can't shake. Somehow, the culture, chemistry, and trust he hoped to create within his program deteriorated to a point that a half roster's worth of former players have ganged up to say his treatment of them was so negative he should pay with his job. An internal investigation ordered by Chancellor Phyllis Wise and conducted by the Office of Diversity, Equity, and Access reviewed the initial charges and nothing was found to warrant action against Bolant. That investigation was conducted by the office's associate director, Kamala Abdul-Espan, and it concluded there was no violation of applicable law or university policy. Wise wanted the allegation of improper treatment of an injury to be handled by Franzick Radlett, and that is ongoing. Once again, it must be stated that the university would do well to be as forthcoming as possible once the findings are in. Some of the health-related matters won't be revealed due to privacy laws, but the public deserves a plausible explanation of other charges. We love sports because we love the drama they can create. But Illinois too often finds itself embroiled in the wrong kind of drama. In the meantime, we're unable to talk about whether or not the football team can win 6 or 7 games to keep itself in the bowl picture. Instead, we're marking time, waiting for an investigation that may or may not exonerate the program. Good luck building the Illini brand with that going on. Woman hits self with bowling ball as cover for robbery. Decatur. A 30-year-old employee of Playmore Lanes triggered a massive rapid response from Decatur police when she reported she was knocked unconscious by a robber with a bowling ball who emptied the company's safe. However, when police looked at the surveillance video, it told a different story. At 9:25 p.m. Thursday, 8 officers responded to the report of the robbery, many of them using their emergency lights and traveling at an increased rate of speed, said an affidavit by Patrol Officer James Weddle. Jamie L. Gordon said she had been struck in the head with a bowling ball and all of the money, $2,100, had been stolen out of the safe. Weddle wrote in his statement, she said she did not see her assailant because she was struck from behind and knocked unconscious. When a manager arrived at the bowling alley, he granted Weddle permission to view the surveillance video. I observed Jamie walk into the office. Jamie walks over to the counter in the office and picks up a red bowling ball with her left hand and a cash drawer with her right hand, the affidavit said. Jamie proceeds to strike herself twice in the back left side of the head with the bowling ball. Gordon then dropped to the floor, where she remained for 13 minutes waiting for another employee to discover her. After informing Gordon that he just watched her strike herself in the head with a bowling ball twice on video, he asked her where the money was. Jamie sighed and stated, "Some of it is in my car." She led the officer to her car, where she pulled out a Hello Kitty brand bag full of money. The bag contained $439. When asked where the rest of the missing money was, Gordon said she had gambled it away in the bowling alley's slot machines. During an interview, Gordon said she recently gambled away her paycheck. After that, she began taking money from the drawers and safe. She said she already owed Playmore Lanes $250 as a result of the other missing cash. Jamie admitted to striking herself in the head with the bowling ball in an attempt to make it look like she had been robbed. Jamie advised she struck herself with the bowling ball so that she would have a knot on her head when police arrived. Gordon, who has no prior criminal record, was booked into the Macon County Jail, where she was being held on $7,500 bond. She is due in court for her arraignment by Friday. Can a new drug brown the fat and trim the obese person? New research has found that a variant of a drug used to treat pulmonary arterial hypertension prompts weight loss in obese mice. Among mice fed a high-fat diet, those who did not get the medication became obese while medicated mice did not, the same study showed. The experimental drug used, a stimulator of soluble guanyl xylase, or SGC, is a member of the same class of novel drugs as the drug Riociguol, which was approved by the Food and Drug Administration in 2013 as a treatment for high blood pressure in the blood vessels that lead to the heart from the lungs. The drug, produced by Bayer Healthcare Pharmaceuticals, is marketed as Adempas. In mice, the SGC stimulator drug prompted the shift in fat tissue, turning some stored white fat in the mice to a form of fat that burns up more energy and improves metabolic function. The beneficial fat is called beige or brown fat because it is richly populated with cellular furnaces known as mitochondria, which appear brown under a microscope. Unlike white adipose tissue, which tissues hormonal signals that prompt the storage of still more white fat, brown fat burns up fat and appears to protect against weight gain, even when caloric intake is high. The new research, published Tuesday in the journal Nature Communications, showed that in mice made obese by a high-fat, high-calorie diet, the SGC stimulator not only promoted weight loss, it also improved glucose tolerance, reduced insulin levels, and drove down signs of fatty liver. A damaging consequence of established obesity, it even shrunk white fat cells. In plump mice on the SGC stimulator, circulating dietary fatty acids were increasingly drawn into the brown fat, which, during physical activity, burned it up at high rates. Even muscle and white fat in those mice increased their use of the circulating fatty acids. The result? Those mice burned up more calories and their abnormal metabolic function improved. The new research, led by researchers at the University Hospital in Bonn, Germany, also shed light on a key pathway, a sequence of molecular events that takes place in the normal generation of brown fat. In doing so, they highlight a number of targets or links in that chain of molecular events at which experimental therapies might intervene to prompt the shift of white fat to brown. Some of those have already been explored and found impractical, while others may result in new experimental drugs for obesity and its health consequences. Among those under investigation are drugs that mimic the action of natriuretic peptides, hormones that play key roles in rescuing the heart and its blood vessels from failure. In the meantime, the SCG stimulator used here, the authors concluded, might be used to enhance weight loss induced by physical activity. If a drug related to rheosigual is to enter the broad use for obesity, however, it will have to be cheaper than its close chemical relative. At doses taken by those with pulmonary arterial hypertension, a typical month's prescription of Adempas costs close to $2,800 or $90,000 a year. As a treatment for the nation's more than 72 million obese adults, that cost could prove to be prohibitive, especially as obesity and its consequences are increasingly understood to be chronic conditions that will need long-term management. This concludes part one of the Decatur Herald Review for Wednesday, May 27, 2015. This has been Matthew reading. We will continue with part two shortly. Please stay with us.